A62. Number 8B.
Let's go to truth. How do you get the tonality of truth?
All right. There is one infinite all in all mind that has been created by the one mind. This one all in all mind is the one spiritually diversified, classified, and individualized idea that is the divine nature. This one mind spirit is the one identity, the one selfhood, the one ego of the one universe of ideas. These constitute the one principle, and its one idea is this one mind spirit. This one principle then becomes the one individuality of life, which has all of those capacities and resources of soul and spirit and mind. And this gives us the one compound idea, truth, the one gestalt of truth, this one consciousness that is the Christ consciousness, the child of the Father. All that the Father has, I am. This means that I am the consciousness of perfection and not the general race consciousness that mythology and I seem to have to bring in the negative. Not mythology and magic and mysticism and all of these other things that apparently would attempt to veil the truth. I am the present, that's why, the consciousness of truth. This consciousness is always meeting the highest standard of being. It's the only standard. It always, therefore, destroys and annihilates any error that would attempt to veil my true form. And I like to bring in the fact that this one whole consciousness is always affirming its own true form. And at the same time, it's always affirming the true form of the gestalt, the whole consciousness.
Well, good. Thank you. Who wants to go on, truth?
This sixth day of truth brings forth the sun and the work is finished. The birth is finished.
Yes. Is the birth finished at the sixth day or at the seventh day?
Sixth.
Good. The sun comes out, huh? The sun is established, yes.
All right. Finished is the right word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes?
This perfect consciousness is the healing consciousness.
The healing consciousness, yes. It's the Christ consciousness, as has been said, yes. What does truth, as that Christ consciousness, do? It heals, yes.
It's healing.
See, why did I say it's not the medicine? Truth is not the medicine.
Mind
is the medicine, and truth is what?
Truth is healing.
The remedy.
The remedy.
See?
Truth is remedy and mind is healing.
What is the difference between medicine and remedy? Huh? The remedy, yes?
The remedy is specific to the.
Now, it's the right application of the medicine, huh?
Yes.
See, that's because you can apply a medicine wrongly, huh? Then it is no remedy. So truth is that one which applies rightly what mind has in store, yes? The medicine of mind is the becomes the remedy of truth, huh? And so the truth is healing, huh? Because it has the right idea, therefore through the right idea can detect, analyze and detect what is wrong, and therefore destroy, annihilate, wipe out all that is wrong. So truth has that terrific power of destroying error. Huh? Yes? Yes?
It means to me in overall sense that truth has the potency to see that the idea of mind is carried out in its perfect, or in its actuality.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mind-truth relationship.
That's mind-truth relationship again.
Huh? Actuality of reality.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
fullness.
That's why... in the first place, you see, Almagin said, I have always to start with mind and when I want to see truth. Huh? Because she had to take all these elements of mind and say, now they become actualities, they become factual in truth, and they affirm themselves, they establish themselves, and they acknowledge themselves, and that's our... inheritance that we have, that we can claim all the ideas of mind. Huh? Yeah. So again, the claiming of truth, the affirming of the truth, that's what is necessary. Yes. All right, let's go to love, to the most beautiful synonymous term, love. And who wants to do love? All right. All right, love, yes, please.
Well, we have to start that God is love. And this love is the universal love, the love that meets every human need, the love that is all-encompassing, all-embracing, the true mother love, the true motherhood, the sense of the universality of this love, which makes it so whole.
All right. So I have, up to this point you were saying or depicting love in a sense that is love, which does not really yield the scientific sense of love. If somebody would have been sitting here from any Christian church, would have said, yes, 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 I agree. Huh? And yet would have understood under love of what you said something completely different. They would have said, yes, love is universal, yes, love meets all the needs, yes, love is all-encompassing, it's all-encircling. Every one of the churches would say that. But they would have a different sense of love. And so this must really be brought out, what is the deeper sense or the scientific sense of love. These are characteristics that are right, but not really touch the core of love with a capital L. That which, say, the other churches don't have. What is really that great point that Mrs. Eddy brings out on the love? The great point that she brings out is that love is never without its object. That love is never separate from its manifestation. This unity that exists between principle and idea must be brought out in love as being absolutely inextinguishable. That love means that because principle has an idea, that idea is always at the point of fulfillment. So that there is no sense coming up that the noumenon cannot be expressed in the phenomena. That the moment you have the noumenon, you have the phenomena. That's love. That is that which takes away all sense of separation between principle and idea. That there is an absolute close unity between the cause and its effect, between the cause and its manifestation. Love is never without its objectification, never without its manifestation, never without its phenomena, never without its fulfilled expression, never without its perfect manifestation. This is the point. If we see that as love, then we have it. Then, only then fear goes away. Because fear is nothing else but the sense of being able or the possibility to be separate from God. So we must be very careful that when in the tone of spirit started out, that spirit separates, it's the great separator, we have to know, as it has been brought out very clear, it's separator between opposites. He is in love, he is not the separator, he is the unifier of equal. That's actually the point. Love never lets come in any separation between principle and idea. Yeah, that's the point. If we can see, you know, this is a terrific thing. I very seldom find somebody who really interprets the synonymous term love rightly. They all have a Christian sense of love. They all speak about love. Love, love here, love there. Yes, love, yes, my love, and so on. They have a religious sense of love. It's still that sense that love meets all human needs, and that love cares for everybody, and that love is taking care of everybody. This is something that every religion tells us, everyone. That is nothing unique to Christian Science. We must see what is unique about the capitalized term love. And that capitalized term love means something. It's difficult even for me to put it into words, you know. Something you have to think about. It's the fact that being is coexistent with, that being, capital B, is coexistent with being, small b. That unity, that coexistence of principle and idea is love. It's not principle, it's love. Which says to us, because there is a being, that being is always at the point of fulfilled expression, of fulfilled manifestation. That's love. And therefore, it is that sense where love always sees in everything loveliness. Love, what is Mrs. Eddy's term about loveliness? Yeah. So, that's the point. That's why then you have that inseparability, that impartiality. Yes?
Rick? I was going to say, the human sense of love is really astray, because to the human scene, love translated can actually wound the chaser.
Yes?
To bring about a higher sense of love. So at a human level of experience, the human sense of love is really right off the beam.
Yes.
Love isn't always.
Yes. Yes. It's right off the beam. Yes. Yes. Yeah?
I think my teacher was quoting Mrs. Eddy when she told us in this context that love in every conceivable situation speaks so tenderly that it doesn't hurt.
I don't believe it. I don't believe, even if your teacher has said, and even if your teacher has quoted Mrs. Eddy, because Mrs. Eddy says the very opposite. She said that truth hurts.
Yeah, it's correct, yeah.
I think that's what we have to see, that love forces us to accept what best promotes our growth. And that is going through a lot of pain and suffering. So on the human level, love can hurt very, very much. Very, very much. But the beginning of it actually is so wonderful, that love is that which can always see in every situation not the evil, not the error, but the perfect idea, which just has, you see, in love, really, the last sense of duality is resolved. Yeah. At that point, you can say error is excluded. Yeah, it's not truth destroys error. Love, in love, error is excluded. Yes, and therefore you only—it's always fixing one's gaze on the right idea.
Love fulfills only the seven.
You can say that. Yes, love fulfills only the seven. Yeah. Yes. So we must see. Yes, just a moment. We must see that. In our list of love, we have a lot of terms that indicate the Christian connotation of love, of ministering love, of meeting all our needs of loveliness and of lovely attitude and so on. But this is not really the scientific, deeper sense of love. It's... You think about it in your quietudes, and something comes upon you, I know, when you think about it, to see that we must correct within our consciousness the belief that there is any separation between God and His creation, between Creator and creation. When we can eliminate that belief that there could be a distance between Creator and creation, then we have touched love. Then it's that coexistence of principle and idea, coexistence of cause and effect, coexistence of noumenon and phenomena. But there is no more any space in between, no time in between, no process in between. Nothing between anymore, it's that coexistence. That's why in the textbook, the moment usually she comes to the great tone of love, in the textbook structure, she brings in always that coexistence. Yeah.
What you were just saying, what you said before about principle and this idea of being inseparable, then that brings in the plan and the design of love.
Yes.
In which every idea is seen in this relationship, so that it isn't that one sees that there's a plan or design that I'm experiencing, but even when it appears that either we hurt or another seems to hurt, to still see that is the design of love.
Yes.
That may appear humanly as being wounded or hurt or something, but that just, to see the universality of the plan, of the design of love, just seems to hold it.
Yes.
Hold it
all. Yes. Yeah.
When I think where the suffering aspect comes in is simply that love, perfection, wants to see its own self.
Yeah.
Perfection.
Yeah.
And we don't always like to be perfect.
No, not at all. That's where the suffering comes in. Yeah, 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 yeah. That our sense of perfection is too small. It's too little, and we don't have a high enough sense of perfection because the divine principle has a much higher idea in front of itself than we have. We always reason in that small system of reference of the human outlook and think that if our human outlook is can be manifested in a perfect way, that we have it, not realizing that it is a human outlook and not a divine outlook. Yes. So, yeah, that's what we would have to see in the synonyms. Yes. So this would be assignment 2. I just see that this must be done better, much better. If we don't have a very clear feel of this synonymous term, it's actually a waste of energy and time if one actually goes further, because then we talk about the synonyms, and we only have a word sense of the synonym, a letter sense of the synonym, and actually not the tonality, not the spiritual tonality within ourselves. It's like if we would try to play on an instrument that is not in tune. What's the use of playing a nice big concerto on a piano that is not in tune? Doesn't really sound very good. So I feel that you must give a lot of more attention to this, much more. And this is naturally something nobody can teach you. You know? Nobody can now sit down and say, now I teach it to you. It's actually, at the moment you leave point one, B1, and you come to P2, it's an individual culture. Nobody can get around that. So no group work, no class teaching can do that. It's really that where man is alone with its own being and is talking with God, is talking with reality all by himself, and is pondering it in a loving way, in a tender way, in a patient way, not trying to force something, not trying to put one's own one concept into a synonymous term. It's a great, great job. It looks so simple. Doesn't it look simple just to have a clear sense of seven terms? Seems that this is the simplest thing on earth, and yet because it's a new language, an absolutely new language, it takes some devotion. So I would recommend that next year we go over this again, and that you come back, and then when we do that assignment, that it just flows. You see, that it just like a wonderful instrument that you blow. Huh? With mind you blow the trumpet, and with spirit you play the violin. Huh? And with soul you play another instrument. It's different. Don't get discouraged about it. It's reality. It's our own being which we contemplate. It's not something academical, it's not something intellectual, it's not something far off. It's our very being which we contemplate, and somehow we should have a great enough love for our own being to sit down and say, now, what is being? What is the nature of being? Of being and my being and everybody's being and the only being there is, what is that true nature? And just contemplate that. So that we are always contemplating from the synonym and not somehow up to the synonymous term. Yes, well, that would be that. And that gives us a chance to make a break.